Damn it. Okay, hopefully this works. This is Dallas Suicide. I have the recording for this week. You know, I was thinking on the way over here.
This must be, like, really weird for people just tuning in. Like,
coming in the middle of a movie.
You have no idea what the fuck is going on, and nothing makes any sense. So, you know Double Feature. They talk about movies, there's spoilers, blah, blah, blah. That part isn't hard. But then, November 8th. Fuck my life. It's weird how something can just come in and fuck up your whole plan. I get why they took the show underground. It's escapism. They live in a parallel universe down there, where the schedules still make sense, where we didn't drop everything important we were talking about just to deal with this new thing. The girls have a plan, but let's talk about that later. Right now, clear your mind and try this.
Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom?
My name is Eric, and I have a semi-hot take here with Michael Kester. Lukewarm take.
Lukewarm take.
Medium temperature take. There's a couple ways we do this show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different for both of us now, because for the past 7 years or whatever,
for the majority of the show, right? Yeah, got to accept that this is how the show actually is.
Yeah, I know.
Jason wears the mask. He wears the mask. That's how it is.
Right. That's about the right ratio, actually. That's terrible. So off to a great start. So there is sometimes we do films and I want a lot of time to reflect on them and think about them and how they stay with me changes over time. And the themes kind of, they expand out in my head and all of that's good to have before I have a conversation with you.
Sure, right.
And then sometimes I see a movie and I want to do just this happened and now here's the news. And I have never wanted to go from watching a film to recording so quickly as with both of these movies today.
I know.
Not to put any false equivalence kind of thing going on here. But I was looking at this and I was going to say that about Open Windows, but then remembered we were just talking a second ago about End of Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two movies that I can't fucking wait to talk about.
I know. It's awesome. Well, you have to wait because remember when we were talking previously on the show about how we don't have to talk about the animal that shall not be named?
We can name it this time though, can't we?
Yes, we can. We can. Today
I
is
don't
a
remember
sponsored
why we sometimes
nomenclature.
Name it. Oh yeah. That's right. That's right.
The nomenclature is sponsored today. So today we get to mention beavers again. Beavers.
That's good.
Beavers.
I don't think this is like Fiddler on the Roof. I don't think
beavers,
you can just say beavers.
We did a documentary for John called PBS Nature : Leave It to Beavers. But John also sponsored a number of episodes wherein he would like us to reiterate the greatness of beavers. And he's also been, since that show aired, he's corresponded a few times to really drive home his feelings on beavers. So I know exactly the ways we should talk about beavers so that John's getting the bang for his kickstart.
Tell me a beaver fact, I suppose.
Well, it's not a fact as much as it's a consideration. So back in that documentary, we saw kind of that thing where the guy used the beaver to actually create a fake ecosystem out of the water. He tricked the beaver into making an ecosystem.
This is previously on Leave It to Beavers,
right?
In case you missed this beaver documentary.
One of the things I know John is interested in is the possibility of taking beavers, utilizing their innate abilities and working with them, coexisting with them in such a way that beavers could solve your water drought problem in the course of, 1 to 4 years or so.
Right.
He's seriously interested in you and not just beavers, but specifically beavers coexisting with animals, this particular animal in such a way that it could actually benefit mutual beneficial. It's this symbiotic relationship.
Yes, thank you. There it is. Mm-hmm. Not parasitic,
right.
Which is
Yeah.
Where you make a hat out of the beaver.
Beavers are the symbiotes. We're the Topher Grace, and together we're Venom.
Don't. Why? Why did I know that's exactly what you were thinking about? The Topher Grace. That's another one of those movies we all just decided to forget existed. Here's what I love is, and I actually think we did a great show on that beaver show.
Yeah, no, I'm
now that we can snicker about it a little bit now that it's over and done with. I don't know if everyone quite realized how fucking seriously we purposefully took that show.
Yeah.
It was difficult.
Right.
Suppressing laughter is the hardest thing on this fucking show for me. It's really, I don't know why the show is so fucking funny to me, but it really is. Just doing it is funny. But a lot of shows have sponsorships that go through like a podcast network or, I mean, wherever. If you listen to a lot of podcasts, especially of certain genres, you start to hear, oh, they must apply through this network because they all have the same five pieces of copy that they read, and it rotates, and they'll start talking about mattresses or underwear or whatever their, you know, men's razors. And this is a show with ads you will hear nowhere else because, one, it's not really an ad. I don't believe we've given anyone a call to action. Just like beavers and learn more about them. And they are good. That's the call to action. And two, who's going to have a fucking ad for beavers?
I know. That's the best part.
I like that people just reserve time on the show.
This is basically public access. And
this is seriously if you just open the lines to anyone and call us blindly. That's basically what's going on here. So, and beavers, thanks for calling. And who's on the next line?
I believe it's Elijah Wood. Is on the next line.
Oh, right, he is, actually. So I want to admit something about Open Windows really quick before we get into it while we're talking about the being of the...
You hated it too?
This, okay. Yeah, right. So, you know, usually if a movie has some missteps, we'll just ignore them here because we like to find good in movies. And I will say, because I think it's important, that there are things in this movie that are seriously pretty goofy, only by comparison to how awesome the movie is as a whole. I mean, the kind of, all the Comic-Con stuff in the beginning sets the movie up to not be nearly as intelligent or interesting as it is, because you can tell they don't care about the meta movie. I don't even, what's the fucking name of the meta movie? Do you remember?
No, but it looks really good.
So they're advertising this thing, which I knew from the first second. Oh, we're watching a fake
schlock
movie.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah. Right. Schlock the movie. And they're setting up these really deliberate pieces of information through the Q&A.
Hanging the guns on the wall. Yeah.
They really are. They really are. So I'm seeing all the setup coming and I'm going, you know, this movie's going to be a little goofy. And then as soon as we zoom out onto the desktop, which is both a spoiler and also maybe the most enticing thing you could say to a person, it is so fucking captivating.
Yeah.
Just unnecessarily, unworthy captivating. Just, I can't even justify.
Yeah, it's
why
funny.
I dare not take my eyes off it.
We talk all the time on the show about being able to identify with things going on in movies. And sadly, I think with Open Windows that it happens. And I mean, it's the equivalent of, you know, it's the equivalent of a found footage movie for you and I, because we're like, oh my God, it's like I'm there. I know exactly what this feels like to be looking at a screen talking to somebody on FaceTime.
If there weren't so many spoilers on my desktop right now, I would screenshot it for the website.
Yeah.
It is really, I mean, it's a lot more static,
right?
You know, notes and things. Right.
And Sasha Gray is in a different place.
Right. It's in a second monitor. I was going to make a less of a joke about it, but that would actually be wonderful. I don't know why. I was going to say, I don't know why I'm not watching TV while I'm talking to you, but clearly there's space on these open windows here. But I remember you telling me a couple times, and this is true with both. That's the theme of the movies today, is Michael's told me about them 100 times, knowing I would love them, and then I instantly forgot. And this is just one of the problems of doing a show like this. I know you've told me what Open Windows is. I know because there's a double feature joke
yep.
in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've talked about it even more than, I mean, I know the name Open Windows backwards and forwards because I've had to type it into message sure, windows and right? color correct it yeah. and reshoot it and do mm-hmm. all these crazy things. But also there were notes in the script. There's kind of a gag. I don't, did you do that intentionally?
What?
All my favorite movies?
Oh, no. Maybe.
At the end.
I can't
at the
even
end,
remember.
She
yeah.
goes, these yeah. are all my favorite movies. And I'm like, yeah. is this an Open Windows joke or not? Or a double feature?
Yeah.
That's a line in yeah. the fucking movie. All right. It doesn't, whatever.
I believe the line in the movie is somebody's done their homework.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that. And then mm. later you followed up by telling
true,
me
you're right.
all my no. favorite
yeah.
movies.
That's right.
And so I cracked up when that happened. And so there's a lot of stretches. And again, this is true in both of these movies. You know, this is a sort of different take on a kind of found footage that we're doing here, proving once again that even though ourselves included, everyone rolls their eyes at the notion of sitting down to watch a found footage movie.
Right.
We once again discover, what did I just fucking say? These yeah. are like the two greatest movies mm-hmm. I've seen. I mm-hmm. love them. Fucking found footage gets me every time.
This movie is special too, because there's another film that came out that was utterly terrible. It's a horror movie that came out last year, year before. And it's the same concept. The camera essentially never leaves this computer screen, and a bunch of friends are all on
yeah.
FaceTime.
Swipe left. Isn't that what that was called?
No, it was called Unfriended, and it was horrendous.
So swipe left isn't Taken?
I don't know.
So I could just become the third in this series
right.
of films.
Well, but the difference is in the other film, the camera stays on the computer screen and then everybody is all in FaceTime windows, right? So everybody is stationary, staring at a screen. The elegance of actually creating a movie is utterly just, you just go sit
sure.
here, stay in the window where you can see yourself and do your lines.
You're doing a table read.
Right. Open Windows is deceptive in that while you're constantly looking at a computer, there's fucking car chases, there's explosions,
right, right.
there's,
right.
you know, shootouts, there's all
and
this.
And I'm totally prepared for it to not have any of that. I'm
right,
just ready
right, right.
at the get-go.
Intrigue,
I'm thinking,
yeah.
Yeah, we're watching
espionage,
a couple different.
Yeah.
It's putting you in the position of this hacker thing that's very in the zeitgeist, this anonymous thing, which I describe as a thing because it's more of a thing than an entity, I think,
mm-hmm.
but maybe another conversation for another day. And I like, you know, we've talked about, we did Adam Rifkin's Look.
Mm-hmm.
I know on there I talked about HBO's The Voyeur Project, which was just, I believe, a website where you stared at the side of a building and there were just a bunch of open windows that you could look through and see mm-hmm. people doing things. And someone would go from the lower left room to the upper right room to like cheat on their husband. And then
yeah.
that person's, you know, wife was coming home or whatever. And you'd see all these stories play out. And this voyeuristic idea, I mean, one, it's at the core of film, it's voyeurism.
Mm-hmm.
But two, putting it in this context of, you know, engagement, the type of Rear Window voyeurism, the climax of Rear Window is the engagement. But the rest of the movie is so voyeuristic that you're not, you're just looking. You're
right.
watching, you really
not
are
involved.
Like the audience.
Right.
And as today's audience moves more towards interactivity and wants more of that, and more storytelling even is done, you know, through like a Telltale game, for instance,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
where a player is, we're back to choose your own adventure
yeah.
to some sense. We're looking at a movie, we're looking at a version of Rear Window with interactivity. We're going, not only is he seeing these events and we're seeing these events, but he has to actively be doing things. And that's why it becomes a car chase and all of these other things. This is like a phone booth type, my favorite go-to movie, phone booth,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
to have that back and forth that he has to constantly be doing things. And we're constantly putting the audience in these, I mean, honestly, just very forced positions to consider things. It's one of the things I love about Open Windows is that in its crudeness and goofiness, it's not spending a lot of time thinking about, Basically, it's putting your face right into the conundrums. It's going, would you do this to save these people? Should he be looking out the window because he got screwed coming to Austin and he has to sit in a hotel room and now he's mad? Should he get his revenge? Mm-hmm. I think we kind of know that the answer is always no to these things.
Right, sure.
Him having to, there's also just situations like him having to tell her to undress and really putting him out there to not even just parrot what the guy is saying, but to his demand is, I'm going to keep zapping this guy unless you creatively tell this girl to be sexy. You know, to not only force somebody to go through, oh, tell her this and then tell her this and tell her this and that demeaning experience. He just goes, I don't know, do something sexy. And that's really, that he's put in a super awkward position. And so I feel like, you know, we're seeing this in a time where honestly, a lot of people probably watch this in a window on their computers. Computer while doing things. A lot of people talk now about a second screen experience and, you know, you watch a debate and then you live tweet it. Mm-hmm. And people are likely doing that while the movie's going on, even though David Lynch would yell at them.
Right.
I love that modern I mean, look at all the stuff we're talking about here, right? So we have modern technology, blah, blah, blah. But then, and this is another secret theme today, is this... In the zeitgeist stuff, we're talking about celebrity nudes,
right?
And hacking.
Well, and hacking the hacker. Don't forget that theme of hacking the hacker.
Right. The French hackers. I love that the French hackers have an Eyes Without a Face poster next to a Pirate Bay poster on their door. Just such a, God, just the way they paint everybody in this movie fucking kills me. What do you think this movie is saying about this celebrity nudes and celebrity culture? I feel like there's something that's at least the killer's trying to drive home.
I think, yeah, the point is the morbidity and how little anybody actually cares about the individual on display and how it's all about the consumption of that individual to the point of, you know, almost literally devouring them. Mm-hmm. Because you finally get the big tableau where the, you know, where he goes, hey, if you log off... She won't die. And then 15 million more people log on who don't have that information.
Right. I know. I was thinking the same thing. Terrible experiment. But what do you... I mean, the movie's begging this question and I will fall into its trap, I guess. What do you think about its opinion that people wouldn't log off? Is it... I mean, the experiment they've set up is a crap experiment. We know that.
Sure.
It's not.
Yeah.
It becomes a news thing.
It's the Joker
people
experiment.
Sign on.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a delay before people sign off. Mm-hmm. It's not as if everybody signed up and then consciously voted kill her instead of don't.
Right.
That would be a little bit more direct, perhaps. But they have this really cynical standpoint that people would keep watching. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's an argument that they believe. Or if that is a way of saying, look, we'd really consume someone to the point of death.
In your thought experiment, before I answer, are we to assume that it is without a doubt that the person in question will die and that it's not possibly just some publicity stunt?
That's a hard thing, too. I think this raises more questions about the experiment. Because honestly, the answer is, do you think people are good or not?
Yes,
I do. They value.
I absolutely do, but I also think people are easily confused, and I think that the internet is where people can be their worst.
Yeah, all of 4chan.
Right,
this goes up on the Drudge Report,
and then I think it's tricky because I'm trying to put myself in the scenario, and there are so many. It's so iffy. There's so many. Well, I mean, I might actually stick around just because I would assume there was no way this was actually happening.
Right. Yeah, this is what I mean about the experiment itself having so many problems.
Right. But I actually agree. I think fundamentally it would probably end up exploding.
Yeah, just based
on
principle.
Well, because here's what I'm doing is like there is the ego of humanity, which is where you and I exist in the real world. That's the ego in the Freudian idea of the self. And then the superego, which I would consider is art, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the id, which is the comments section. And I think that this is the equivalent of opening up the comment section to what would you do to this girl?
So maybe what this is telling us is less about the nature of man, which is a theme that is well worn in cinema, mm-hmm. and more about how technology separates us from the subject.
Well, and I think also to double down on voyeurism, I think that it's pointing out this dichotomy of you see 20 million numbers in the bottom left corner of that screen. They are to the point of full exploitation of the one individual in the middle of the screen. That person's privacy is completely gone, right? Mm. Even outside of the actual experiment performed in the film, when the big celebrity nude leak happened, it's one of those things where they're literally, their privacy has been wrecked. They have none. Mm-hmm. And it's being put in a place where the rest of the planet can privately decide whether or not they look. If they look, they never have to say they did. No one may ever find out. You know, it's taking somebody and completely removing their privacy, but then putting them in an arena where you have the option of complete clandestine,
sure.
like just seeing it. You can just take
it. No one will ever know this crime is committed. Do you still do it
sure.
or not?
That on top of the dichotomy of their privacy is gone. You have full privacy.
Sure.
You can do whatever you want.
Sure. Well, and that their privacy is already gone before you look. I mean, right. there's also circles sure. that believe that if none of us looked at the stuff when it was out there, that's the right thing morally to do. And I mean, we could talk forever about morally really where.
And then you get to the conversation lies. Of, well, if, I mean, the cow's already dead, why can't we just eat the burger?
Yeah. You always go for the violent metaphor, don't you? Yeah. I mean, there's better places to have that conversation, I think. But these are all questions that are coming up in the same movie that I'll remind everybody is not only an Elijah Wood horror film, but a Sasha Gray mm-hmm. film as well. Right. This is now two extremely heady Sasha Gray movies we've done.
And it's also worth noting that it's directed by Nacho Vigalondo, who did, he was the VHS Viral, and he did an ABCs of Death. Time Crimes was his big
oh,
one.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Time Crimes.
That's right. Everybody loved Time Crimes. This is a way better movie. I'm just going to come out and say that. If you like Time Crimes, you should be watching this thing because it'll be your new favorite. I also think, you know, at some point we transcend that line. We also forget we're watching a screen. I mean, very
oh, yeah.
intentionally.
Oh, yeah.
And then really, even when I remember I'm watching a screen, I don't know which layer I'm in, which mm-hmm. reality. Is this a video of someone else's notebook, or is this like a evidence of, are we watching the kidnappers thing, watching the other guy, or I don't know until obviously the very end. But flickering in and out of that reality and what it says about those layers of detachment, that's the same commentary now with the internet as it's always been for cinema. You'll talk about all sorts of really even devastating things about actors because they're far away, because they're not. We can come on the show and criticize Angelina Jolie for doing any number of things because she doesn't live in the same world we do.
Well,
she
and it's easy
might as
because,
well not be a real person.
Because she can't criticize us back.
You think that's she a big part of it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, when somebody is in the public eye to that degree, you don't have to worry. And Twitter has, you know, Patton Oswalt has made this a dangerous, dubious place to play.
Right.
Because before Twitter, it wasn't as easy as mentioning Patton Oswalt saying, fuck that guy. And then Patton Oswalt happened to be like, no, fuck you. And furthermore,
yeah, right.
you know.
Yeah, that's very true. I never think about that side of it.
End of Watch is a film. David Ayer directed End of Watch, and that's important mm-hmm. because David Ayer will have become synonymous with one of the weaker, one of the less than beautiful moments in Hollywood cinema.
Uh-huh.
I could write an entire 6-page article on all the things that Suicide Squad has proven is wrong with Hollywood. I could do that. But David Ayer, before Suicide Squad, guys, actually made great films. And End of Watch, I think, is David Ayer at his best because it's gritty, but also it's inventive. It's the 1-2 punch of being a great film, really, you know, bringing you into a world that you're not allowed into, right? That's his real strength as a director, is going, this is what war is like, you know, with people in it, or this is what Suicide Squad is like. But you know, now you're here. And I think with End of Watch, especially with what's going on in the United States right now, in regards to the police force, it humanizes this situation in such a way where you start going, oh my God, yeah, every day they're worried they're going to die. Every day they're worried someone's going to shoot them.
Yeah. I mean, I want to lay out a timeline for this because I think that's going to be really important in that conversation. But I don't want to depart from the David Ayer moment here either, because this is somebody who so often seems to work in, you remember that movie SWAT?
Yeah.
Or
Sabotage?
I mean, I guess the original Fast and the Furious.
Okay.
I think it was the 2001 one. Yeah, it was the original one. These just aren't movies that, you know, they are bad boys movies.
Mm-hmm.
They are movies that are known for their
heavy
high octane.
Heavy on the octane. Wow.
Right. There it is. And of course, I think amazing things have happened with the Fast and the Furious since its inception. I think there was a period where I was the only one saying that. And now I feel
Vin
like
Diesel
I'm no
agrees.
Longer in the
You're correct.
Minority. No, people give those movies a lot of credit now. There's
they
a
do.
James
yeah.
Wan Fast and the Furious. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's going to be amazing. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen any of them. I'm waiting for that day. That day is going to come.
Right.
There's a Harry Potter day in my future, and there's a Fast and Furious day in my future.
I don't think either of those days are going to find their way on the show, though. My point here was, yeah, he's doing something that's very real from a guy who doesn't often do that.
Yeah.
You just talked about Suicide Squad. I mean, yeah, really realistic. Oh, God. So, you know, this is a movie that I'm actually kind of caught off guard by.
I know.
And, you know, part of that is the honesty to it. And then the other part is what you mentioned. I mean, we're taking a look into, you said something to me before we started recording about this movie.
Right.
Do you want to mention that again?
Well, so before we recorded, I just told, you know, sometimes we worry on the show that maybe we won't be able to cover 24 minutes of a movie. End of Watch, Open Windows, this is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned, you know, we say whatever we want to about End of Watch, and then if we need to fill time, cops with cameras on them.
Right. And I told you that was first in my notes.
Right.
And so I want to lay out this timeline, and then we'll just fucking figure out whatever to do about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's such an elephant in the room.
Sure.
That it is hard to not discuss. I mean, you've invoked it already.
I know.
So
You made me though, to be fair.
End of Watch came out the year of the Trayvon Martin killing.
Yes.
And this was for the United States, if you aren't in the United States or don't pay attention to this, really the beginning of the latest wave, I think, of a conversation about police brutality in the black community.
Kind of, except Trayvon Martin wasn't shot by a police officer.
Well, yeah, but it did start, however, and that's important for
right. There was clemency, racial clemency,
mm-hmm.
or due to race. Yeah, I'm just for people unaware. I want to specify the Trayvon Martin thing was not a cop.
Sure,
there have been plenty of cops executing blacks since then. I'm not trying to say that that doesn't happen. I just, Trayvon Martin just didn't happen to get killed by a cop. He got killed by a racist, fascist fuck. It's fine.
Right. So this was something people were still, I think, a little torn on exactly how to talk about at the time,
mm-hmm.
because there wasn't such a clear narrative around it. You couldn't really rally behind weirdos in Florida not shooting black kids. That wasn't really not much of a hashtag to that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so End of Watch comes out, I think that happened in February, and End of Watch comes out in September. Having no idea this is even anywhere on the radar, nor would it even necessarily say anything about it had it been, because it doesn't bear a lot of relation. It's not about police.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot the movie even the year, later half of the year prior to that. So certainly not in the thoughts leading up to this movie, which I think makes this a better film than had it been made 2 years later.
Because
like our show, you just can't ignore it.
Right.
You know, there is a huge conversation that is happening in this country. And I think it's been happening really since the very next year and with increasing incidents more mm-hmm. and more as time goes forward about that. Like I said, I mean, accusations of really we have handheld videos is the biggest thing for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the part we could watch a movie about cops. I'm probably not going to think about it, maybe a little, because we always seem to think about it on the show. It's a big, to go back to our favorite Z word, big mm-hmm. zeitgeisty thing. I don't want to say, I usually swap zeitgeist out for in vogue, but I don't think I want to say it's in vogue right. for cops to shoot.
A la mode. That means has ice cream on it. That's different.
No, that's not. Thanks for covering that. The cherry on top, though, is very nice of you. Anyways, my point is, then we started having conversations about, well, can we trust the police? Should they have body cameras? And while we were still kind of having that debate and not giving a lot of definitive answers, and then we get body cameras, but sometimes they mysteriously stop working right mm-hmm. before the incidents.
Right. Like ghosts, like how you can never film a ghost.
Right.
Cameras That's always exactly. go off right before the ghost trips in, comes into the room.
Right. You see how it gets all fuzzy in there? That's because of some paranormal type shooting of an unarmed black man activity happening in there. See how his spirit exits his body and makes right. the camera all...
Yeah. Right.
Okay. But there is a dramatic increase of people filming. In fact, sometimes sure. even the victims...
Okay, to once again, just to keep this in double feature land, the argument against UFOs, right?
Uh-huh.
Everybody's yeah. got cameras. We would have seen an alien by now.
What's amazing is if you had asked people 10 years ago, are black people discriminated against in certain communities by the police? A lot of people would have told you, UFOs, yes, black people, no.
Mm-hmm.
And now we run that camera experiment right. and we don't see any UFOs.
But people still say yes.
But we are starting to see this thing happen that...
And people still say no.
A big part of our country, yeah, really is still saying not a problem. But a big part of our country just didn't believe people.
Yeah,
they just
sure.
said, you know, I get pulled over all the goddamn day.
It's easy when you're not seeing it.
Pulled out of the house.
And it's yeah. easy when you're not seeing it. That's the sad part about any conversation is until the conversation's in your face, it's easier to just be like, that's not happening.
Right. And so, you know, that's one of the great things film can do is put something back in front of us like that, which actually, to get specifically to End of Watch, works in the opposite direction
mm-hmm.
or for the opposite party, I suppose.
Right.
So I think there was a big turn in this conversation when all the police were shot and we really
right.
realized that, you know, both sides had to be a little more sensitive in the sure. way they at least addressed this because it had become such a thing that people felt heated about.
Sure.
Normally it was just one side being heated and the other side defending, right?
Right. Sure.
But now it seems like everybody's dying and everybody's right. mad about it. And it is very easy when you see all these videos, I think, of black people being killed during routine traffic stops and just all sorts of ridiculous mm-hmm. circumstances to hate on police. And then, you know, an incident like that happens is certainly an eye opener. But, you know, to look at a film like End of Watch, it reminds us, I think, that human beings are human beings.
Right. Regardless of what color they're wearing.
Sure. Well, even the monsters in these films,
mm-hmm.
you know, we get to see in End of Watch, I mean, the gang members who are just as Suicide Squad cut out as
mm-hmm.
anybody,
mm-hmm.
still they hang out in a car and they squabble with each other and they're interested in making a film. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I mean? And they got the cartels down their back. And it does something to humanize these people so much in a time where I think now when the rally cry has become more, you know, they just, police just want to come home to their families at the end of the day, and they should have that right to do so, fearing for their life daily. It's really hard to make end of watch right now because you can't.
Because making end of watch in this climate, you pick a side, even if you don't want to, you pick a side.
You do. You really do. Yeah. Yeah. And it's very, very delicate right now because I think there is so much. It's like the abortion conversation that never boils down, right? That everybody just keeps at a state of 10 out of 10 angry, that there's crosstalk and you can't really have a genuine conversation about it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, end of watch is just it's a glorious piece of here's a look into the lives of these two human beings before that becomes immediately politicized. I mean, moments after the film comes out.
Sure.
And then just increasingly over time.
Well, and the thing too with End of Watch that's so, again, not knowing where the climate was going to be in the near future, I think it's super strong that the movie opens on that fist fight.
I know, right? How much different does that look today? It's crazy.
It's the most, that scene is the most, it's super strong because it takes the racial element out of the equation. It takes the two characters, and at least these two characters, but really none of the police officers seem overtly racist.
Right.
And it takes these two characters, one of whom is Latino, and puts them in a situation where they could use their power to take control of a situation that they've invoked. And instead they don't. They make the just call.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after that point, you realize that the film isn't necessarily speaking about, regardless of when you make a movie, if you make a movie where a character that you're supposed to like shouts LAPD, don't move, you're wondering if that person's a racist.
Yeah, right.
Because LAPD, don't move is synonymous with a very racist thing. That it's a very racist thing that happens and continues to happen in our country. And then that happened again in New York. But you need to take, if you want to have this real look at these individuals, at what they're going through, at how this story is going to unfold, you need to know going in, there has to be a self-aware nature to to these characters' backgrounds, to where they are, to how, not necessarily the people in the film that we don't know yet, but that the audience is coming to the film with baggage. And I feel like End of Watch expertly goes, here's what matters, here's what doesn't, here's what you know, here's what you have wrong, and then goes, and now here's the movie.
Well, and also a lot of the humor of the film, I think it would be, I would certainly be too afraid to make a movie like that today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm always afraid to do everything, so that's no surprise. I would have been back then too, but I think you could certainly justify in that scene, in that fistfight scene, Gyllenhaal's character is just staring down at the camera going, can you fucking believe this? I mean, he's just making cracks about it. And today, I think that would offend everybody.
Sure.
Today. Everyone would go, why aren't you helping him? Is this how we solve these things? Look at these cops fucking around all the time, recording stuff and fucking up all these other things. Just any sense of the lightness, which is ultimately what makes them the most human to me, is these moments of seeing the chemistry back and forth, the stuff that actually makes a lot of that buddy cop stuff work. The sort of sitting in the car making jabs at each other, right?
Sure.
I mean, what's also great about that too is when you consider that genre, if you can put this in that genre, by the way, it is the greatest thing in that genre that's ever made. But consider these characters of two different races sitting in a squad car that are partners. You know how that scene plays in every other movie.
Mm-hmm.
And here we still, not only, it's not that we don't talk about the difference in racial backgrounds.
Right.
But that's actually the reason for camaraderie. It's his invitation into this, you know, as he would say, this hella Mexican family.
Right.
This super, super traditional, has these types of parties. They go to the party and make fun of all the purple. Mm-hmm. I mean, the elements of the racial background are very, very much, even Gyllenhaal's character talks about, you know, his white girlfriend with her uptight white mm-hmm. parents, very traditional. Right. Traditional is a cold word for old religious white people, I think.
The very little in this movie to me is more disarming to the racial tension that could be in the front seat of that car than when Michael Pena does a white person accent and orders a coffee.
I know. Well, the way they rip on each other that way is, but also just, you know, the fact we're okay admitting that we're so on the cop side here reminds me of the bust the door down scene in Seven, mm-hmm. right? And then just pay off some hooker on the street to say that you saw the killer or whatever. That cops can get away with, cops can pull you over and just make up any random fucking thing. They just make up nonsense. I have been pulled over for you have a shiny thing hanging from your mirror and then immediately pivoted to have you been drinking tonight? Which is just doesn't seem related to me at all. I am a magnet for that out here. I don't know that we've ever talked about this, but I get pulled over maybe 10, 15 times a year. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Nothing ever comes of any of it except an occasional like parking ticket or something, but it's the most bizarre thing to me. And so I also have that internal resistance toward when I see a police car on the street, I try and get away from it as fast as possible. I use a side street. I feel like I'm almost guaranteed. I don't know what it is about my car. It's a Prius. It's a fucking Prius. It should blend in. I don't have any crazy bumper stickers or anything. They can't see me playing Pokemon Go while I'm driving. I mean, I check out for all these things. I don't know why. I don't know. But in this movie, we're okay admitting cops can pull you over for some random nonsense. We cheer that on. Oh yeah, dangly CD thing hanging from the, oh, busted. And everybody's supposed to go, that's cool. They made up a stupid reason to pull this guy over. We all applaud it. And no fucking way that happens now. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just reading over a lot of the reviews of the film and the way people talked about it at the time. And it was crazy to me that there's just no mention of any of this stuff.
Right.
I mean, it has such a great score behind it. It was so positively received, which I can see looking at it objectively. But tell me this movie, I don't want to be obsessed with this idea of it coming out now, but I mean, that's really something that weighed on me so much when I watched it.
Yeah.
If it came out now, it wouldn't be widely received.
No, it wouldn't have even been widely released.
Yeah, it might have done better for generating so much fucking controversy.
That's
true. Wait for one slow news day and it's propaganda film, mm-hmm. end of watch.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have fucking protests outside. So, I mean, depending on where in the news cycle you are, if it fits in with the narrative.
Sure.
Right. Black people still being killed today. If it's not on the news, it's because something else is going on.
Right.
We lived in Chicago. We know that. I mean, it's ridiculous. We have a massacre every day in Chicago. It's just spread out amongst the entire city.
Right.
And, you know, and you only hear about that stuff now and again, and having little time capsules like this movie, ultimately, that's where my obsession with the time comes in, is that this was the last opportunity and the greatest modern opportunity to talk about this before it went down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That just by happenstance, somebody made a brilliant inside look at the police, which, by the way, is not a place we ever go.
Definitely.
In a faux documentary. We see a lot of what movies think police are.
Right, right.
But just the handheld style tells you right away that, oh, we're really trying to do almost an expose type.
Right, a personal look.
Yeah, it is from the inside. And a look that some people in the department might be uncomfortable with.
Definitely.
It's so on the inside. And all the time, I'm just thinking, I can't believe they're letting them tape this or this or... Where is that fucking camera coming from? Who's holding that one? You know, questions like that. This movie plays a lot looser with the cameras than the previous film.
Yeah, definitely.
This is, I wouldn't even call this a, I mean, technically, I guess it is a handheld cop movie.
Right.
And found footage gets weird because if no one's actually finding the footage, then it doesn't.
Right.
But it's not really so much a documentary as it just includes dashboard cams and includes,
right,
you know, the body cameras when they're actually functioning, I guess.
Sure.
Although they do catch him trying to bust down the door without actually checking the handle first. Stuff like that, man. You know, you can't show that kind of humanity at this moment in time. And I just think this is one of my favorite things we do with Double Feature. Drag out a movie from just a couple of years ago. Boom, immediately way more relevant than it even was at the time.
Definitely.
Way more insightful. Changes minds, spurs actual dialogue. Jake Gyllenhaal before he was in Prisoners. I mean, just all of that stuff is going on here. I really like his police work.
Yeah,
I really do.
Sure.
It's a reference to the Prisoners episode. You loved his police work. That
It's really good.
That's the whole joke. There is one last random music note for people who love the random music notes. Mama Says is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Pussifer track. The antagonistic side project or maybe main project of Maynard James Keenan, who was in A Perfect Circle and Tool. It is, just go look at that stuff. It is antagonistic. I don't know how else to say that. And not even like MSI antagonistic. It's just a whole other thing. And it's weird to see it every time it shows up in public. I don't know whether you've ever seen it in a movie before. Speaking of antagonistic audio, the Double Feature movie is done. Look, I'm just going to roll right through these. Double Feature movie is done. And then I watched it and the audio is completely fucked. And for some reason, Rob just doesn't talk in the whole movie. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to fix that. That sucks. It's so close. This is the movie that will never end. We made a couple of references to that earlier and nobody's seen it. So I'm sure that was just really confusing for everybody. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing is additional content is out. This is Bruce Dern additional.
Right.
I'm going to whip through these. This is Bruce Dern additional content. I won't tell you the movies. If you get additional content, it's on the website. I emailed you a link for it. You've got all that. And it's an awesome episode.
Okay, so here's like me trying to not fuck up the last part of this. The website is doublefeature.fm. The email address is doublefeatureshow@icloud.com. I want to thank executive producers David Anderson, Greg Winter, Aaron Shore, Kimberly Yance, Debbie Sterin, Meta Somerville, David Kosh, and Lexi Love. Good, right? And I'm going to give you one more just because I'm a fucking sucker for punishment. The pair is Dead Ringers and Bad Biology. It's a lot of sex. But Double Feature is kind of sex. Not the fun kind of sex. Of course, because the world is still good, this is the part where I tell you. I'm Dallas Suicide. You can find me on suicidegirls.com. Less film over there, but still better naked parts. You can also find me on Instagram at dallas.suicide or on Twitter, just Dallas Suicide. So yeah, we'll see you next time. Watch more fucking film. Bye. Mwah.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.